Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we're here until 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. Three lines open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. And we will do our best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. We did have a caller recently who was talking about his business, and he had some three-year-old Windows 7 machines, and the company that sold them to him was saying, you got to replace them now, bud. They won't be supported as of January. The same company had installed servers with an operating system that was 5 months away from being obsolete. Again, wholly a disservice to this guy. And if you heard his story, the reason is they got you, and you think they got you, and you have to feel like, okay, whatever you say, I'll pay. I don't know how many flowers this guy's going to have to sell to keep buying new computer systems, but that's not the point of a computer system. The point of a computer system is not to keep the IT guys in business. The point of the computer system is to make it easier for you to sell more flowers. So when it's reverse, you have to ask yourself, who are you working for? The IT guys? Or are you wanting to sell flowers? So I've been at Tab almost 30 years, and we see this a lot. We pick up accounts where IT companies have migrated, 2003 operating systems to $70,000 worth of hardware and never told the customer, by the way, you're still running 2003 for your server. They sold them 70 grand worth of hardware. It's really kind of a wild, wild west out there. And to hear this guy's story on the radio, it is something we see regularly. And again, it comes down to where the power is. And in this case, he's stuck with a provider because it's linked its payments to the point where it seems to be such that it's the only way to go. And that's going to happen with cloud providers more and more, where in this case, he had a local on-premise system, but still stuck in an ecosphere he felt he can't get out of. There's always alternatives, always. Heck, he could still sell flowers if he used Excel. And he ran the credit card through. I mean, selling flowers is no different than selling pizzas, other than it's more artistic. And, I mean, the pizza shop can just run your credit card through in 5 seconds. You shouldn't be beholden to a monster system. It should be reverse. The system is there to help you, not shackle you.
How many hours of labor would it take to do it manually compared to what he's paying?
Oh, my goodness. But again, we're not trying to make fun of him or anything, because we want to use his example of, think about what you're doing with your IT systems. If you feel like you're, a slave to your IT system, there's something upside down and backwards about that. If it's just, I have a law practice who's literally contemplating $10,000 a month in a software as a service, a hardware as a service approach to their law practice before they improve it. I mean, you can't make it up. It's not how it's supposed to work. You want to be an attorney. You don't want to pay some IT company $10,000 a month.
That's what, $120,000 a year?
Yeah. That's a lot of legal work before you break even. Let's go on to your calls, and we're going to go to Al in Avon next. Hey, Al.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Again. One last question I forgot to ask you.
Oh, sure.
I ran a program, Free Up Space Now, on this Windows 10, and it listed half dozen items to remove files.
Mm.
And the big elephant in the room is the top one. It says, choose which items you'd like to permanently remove to free up space.
Mm-hmm.
And the big one is 36 gigabytes of previous Windows installations.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
the subtext says files from previous Windows installations, files and folders, may conflict with, you can access. What's that all about? This is this brand new laptop.
Well, it's been updated a bunch of times.
Well, yeah. Microsoft comes up with major versions, although it's Windows 10.
Right.
So they had like a 1603 and a 1609, and then they had a 1703 and a 1709,
right.
And then they had a 1803 and an 1809.
They're putting them in a little safety area to go back to.
So what this is, instead of saying, this is version 11, version 12, version
right.
whatever,
right.
you know, they're just kind of hiding it from you.
They named it Windows.old.
Correct.
Right.
Because what it was a major version update.
Right.
And it took a while for it to install.
Mm-hmm.
And so, supposedly, there for a while, they would eliminate them after, like, I think it was 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
They would get rid of that automatically. Yeah. Then they kind of changed it, moved it back to 30 days. And what happened was people were losing data because they didn't move all the data over.
Right.
So they expanded it back out. And I'm not sure what it is right now. But the point is that if you have all your stuff, all of your personal data, and all of your applications came over and everything's working, I think you could safely delete the Windows.old.
Well, this is a brand new HP I bought right from HP.
Yeah, they did the updates.
Well, you know, it sits on the shelf for probably 6 months to a year. So there's two or three major updates.
I went through that and I did all of those.
Well, then that's where the Windows.old came from.
Yeah, you can go ahead and do your free up space now and choose those if you wish. Not a problem.
And that should clear up a good chunk to alleviate my...
Until next Tuesday.
My anxiety for a week, at least, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you still have a small drive, but yes, they're going to download the next... Well, the May release is, I think, either just came out or on its way. And we did post ways to block it if you didn't want the May update to come down, because they have screwed up so many releases lately that I'm not doing it.
Well... Okay, but I think I did it already.
So well. C'est la vie.
Ignorance is bliss in this case. I don't know what I'm missing.
Right. So if it's working for you, Al, just clear it. Go ahead and do the free up space and clean it right out of there and continue.
That shouldn't hurt anything. That is a major piece for me.
It's a major chunk of space there,
So what the Windows.old does is it gives you the opportunity that if the latest update, breaks your system, you can roll it back.
Right.
Once you delete it, you can't go back.
But is it robust enough, or if it works for 2 or 3 days?
You're fine, I think.
You'll be okay then, right? I mean, it's not going to have a latent defect in it, is it?
Well, when you don't know that until you try everything.
Yeah. That's true. You have to try every application. So.
Okay. Well, I'll leave it for a week and then unload it.
There you go.
We'll see what happens.
All right, Al.
All right. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, let's move on to William in Hartford next. What's going on, Will?
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Quick question. I need to, it appears, to replace my printer, which is suddenly telling me to check the cartridge, and I check it and replace it, and nothing changes. If I were to buy a new printer to print, copy, scan, no fax, black only, what would you recommend as the most cost-effective?
Laser.
Printer.
A laser printer that does that for you, you could probably find for a couple $100.
Okay.
And stay away from inkjet.
Okay. Yeah, the printer I had was cheap, but I probably spent 10 times the money on ink over the years.
You did.
Yeah. Stay away from inkjet.
Yep. You can get a cheap laser, and that's what I would do. It'll last you years and years and years and years and years.
Okay. Second quick question. I have a PC that's hardwired, Windows 8. Sometimes it takes forever to come up, and I get a message on the bottom that says script running.
Mm-hmm.
How do I find that so I can kill it? I don't know. It says, do you want to stop it? And I say yes, and then life is good. Is there a way to head that off and stop it from running?
You got to find out what the name of the script is.
And it doesn't say.
And it might. Yeah, you can find it if you open up the task manager. So down on the taskbar, down at the bottom, the bar on the bottom, if you right-click on that, one of the options will be task manager.
Okay.
If you click on that under Task Manager, and then you bring up the Performance tab.
Okay, Performance Task?
Tab. So there's tabs in there. So you got processes, performance, app history, startup, users, details, services, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So under performance, if you click on that, you'll see that what your resources are being used. So you can go under the processes tab and let's say click under the CPU so that it sorts it. And you can see what's using the most of your process.
Okay.
And then you can find the name of the process, and sometimes you can expand them out.
And it could be part of your startup too, right?
Right. So the point is then you find out what it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then react accordingly. Okay.
Yeah, look in your startup for that application that's hanging and try to either remove it if you don't need it.
And
clearly
there,
you don't need it.
In the Task Manager, there is a startup tab.
Right.
Then you can find that application and click on it and
maybe remove it.
Okay. That's what I needed to know. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Yep. Good luck, Will.
Thank you. Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. All right, guys. So four lines wide open on this beautiful Saturday morning. If you ever to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Everything we've talked about has been posted live over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. If you go to Facebook and you like Tab Computer Systems on Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg deems the news worthy, it may get into your news feed. And if you like us over on Twitter, if you follow us on Twitter at Tab Computer Sys, it'll get into your Twitter feed. So everything's there for you. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. Four lines wide open on a Saturday morning. You guys are all out doing your weekend stuff, and I can't blame you because I got to do the same thing. I got to pick up some shock for the pool on the way home, so I understand. But feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. As a way for your calls, there was some news I wanted to bring up that I didn't get to yet. This is interesting. Lyft. This is the competitor to Uber. Lyft's self-driving car service in Las Vegas. Now, it makes sense, I guess, that you do it in Vegas, right? Because if you're in Vegas, you're going to have a crazy time, I guess, and driving and getting a ride in a car without anybody in it to drive you is, I guess, something you do in Vegas.
Well, don't they have, like, free adult beverages in the casino?
They do, I think. I wonder why they do that. 50,000 rides it just surpassed. So, Vegas, if you're getting in a Lyft, I bet you there's a driver in there just in case something goes wrong. They're not touching anything, but they have now surpassed 50,000 autonomous rides. Would you get in a car that's going to drive you autonomously? Now, obviously, if you're a Lyft driver, you're saying to yourself, hey, I have my gig economy that's going to be taken away by the car itself. That's welcome to progress, I guess, my friend.
So the driver's got them an opening in the business. Then the drivers kind of get excluded because that's the human element.
Right. That's the expensive element. So now you can go ahead and get a ride. Would you hop in a car without a driver? I don't think I would. Not now.
Yeah.
No, in 10 years, maybe?
We'll see where security goes. And
yeah.
How many of these systems gets hacked into?
That's true. But 50,000 rides already, which is pretty small. Considering all the rides that Lyft will do, 50,000 does seem like a small amount.
Yeah, you're probably going from what is it, Men, whatever it is, Bay to
Mandalay Bay
to what's the other big one down there?
I have no idea. I've only been to Las Vegas once, and it was for a geek convention, and it was in the Hard Rock, and I couldn't figure out how to get out.
I never been to Vegas, but I went to Scottsdale, Arizona, when they had the national championship with Notre Dame.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And they beat Earl Campbell's college team back in the day.
Now you're dating yourself.
I know I am. But I got to play golf out there on the TPC.
Nice. All right. Any other news you want to bring up as a way for calls? You have four lines wide open, guys. 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Oh, one other quick thing before we get to more news. Cox, you know, I cut the cable, right? And I'm doing everything with streaming. So Cox informed me the day before the last day of my billing cycle that I had used 85% of my data. And if I'm not careful, they're going to hit me with the charge. They told me a day before. Clearly, I was fine. So just to give you a heads up, All my kids are home from school, and we're now streaming all TV. And even my boys were not able to consume, what is it? It's a thousand gigs, a terabyte of data in a month. That says something. So you can do plenty of streaming on 50 megabit service without paying any overages. You just got to remember to turn off the TV if you're not in the room, right? Because it'll keep streaming. So you got to jiggle the handle on that data, or it'll keep streaming. What do you want to bring up, Bob?
Okay, I got an article.
Yeah,
Harbor Air plans to be the first electric airline.
Oh my goodness!
It'll do it with seaplanes.
Hmm.
The company will retrofit its fleet of vintage seaplanes with cutting-edge electric drivetrains from Magnix. Yes,
a battery-powered airplane.
Yep. So it says, in a lot of ways, airplanes represent one of the worst possible use cases for electric motors and batteries. We were talking about.
Wait a minute, is that what it says? It's worst case? I thought that just empirically, well, I thought that was a bad idea.
It says, batteries are heavy and aircraft tend to operate in a steady state at fixed RPMs for long periods, not a recipe for efficiency where EVs are concerned.
Right.
That's not going to stop Harbor Air.
Okay. They're still going to go forward.
From retrofitting its short-hop seaplane fleet with electric drivetrains from a company called Magnix.
Huh.
It's a capital M, and the last letter is M-A-G-N-I, capital X.
Hmm.
So Green Car Reports said Sunday, the Magnix system will, in some case, be replacing internal combustion engines that are well over 50 years old. So this is an old fleet of seaplanes.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and the picture of it is great. Of course, how many of them they had? What, like three crashes lately up in Alaska? Where these guys, these bush pilots, are really good.
And they're flying into each other.
Yeah, I don't know, something wrong there.
Yeah.
The upgraded planes will have 200 kilowatt hour batteries, and their Magna 500 electric motors will produce 750 horsepower and around 2,075 foot-pounds of torque.
Oh, my goodness.
This would give the aircraft an estimated flight time of 30 minutes with 30 additional minutes of reserve, so they can be up in the air for an hour.
That doesn't seem like a long time.
Well,
I mean, what's a normal plane up there for?
Up in Alaska, you know what I mean? They're just hopping from island to island.
Uh-huh.
So they don't really have that long. So if they have a charging...
It's going to take you 3 hours to charge the darn thing.
Well, if they have a charging station, then they have a bunch of airplanes.
Yeah.
They just plug them in every time they use them.
This sounds like disaster all over it.
If that doesn't sound like much, it isn't. These seaplanes, however, spend much of their time doing short flights from Vancouver, British Columbia, to nearby outlying islands.
All right.
For which the 30-minute flight time would be plenty. The company estimates those short hops represent 70% of its 30,000 flights annually.
Hmm. All right.
So, sounds like something that could work for them.
Maybe. We're going to be here until 11 o'clock, guys. Four lines open on this Saturday morning. Feel free to get online if you've ever had trouble. Today's the day, it seems, to get online. 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We'll do our best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Everything we've talked about has been Facebooked and tweeted and posted over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. We'll be right back. Back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. Two lines open for you. We're here till 11 o'clock. 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Let's get right to your calls. You're nice enough to join us on this Saturday morning. Going to go to Joe in Berlin first. Joe, what's up?
Hey, yeah. Earlier you talked about the VPN.
Yes, sir.
What's a good one? I got an email from Redroot saying that they have a new service. They call it Wi-Fi security.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at, I think it was PG Magazine, and looked at VPNs and wasn't listed. So,
yeah, Webroot is definitely a good company when it comes to security. And if they're offering a VPN, that would be definitely one you could do. The idea being is you want to be running through a VPN when you're in a public space and doing anything, you know, that requires security, like banking or something like that online. You don't want to do it without encryption or security. So I run Proton. It's something that I've found to be very, very effective, and it's free. Again, when it's free, you're the commodity, as we've always said. And this company is out of Switzerland. However, there's been a recent article where they have been rolling over with law enforcement inquiries. So there's people that are saying, "Hey, if you're going to roll over, I'm not doing anything illegal, but VPNs are designed for security and privacy." Right. The idea is when you're poking out of the VPN, which is the other side of when you're making your connection to the internet, that company has an idea as to where you're going and what you're doing. So, you know, no security is 100% because you got to trust the company you're working with. But Webroot is a good company for security. So if you want to get a VPN, I would recommend it.
Oh, okay. Now I'm getting to, I want to cut the cord.
Yeah.
Comcast is too expensive.
I agree.
If I replace the router or modem, whatever, what's a good manufacturer?
Oh, there's tons of them out there that are Comcast compatible. You can go to Staples or Best Buy, and they'll actually have them listed as compatible modems. So you want to buy a modem and then a separate router is what I'd recommend.
Okay, router. Okay.
Yeah, so you get your modem. You can buy the combos. There are combos as well. I just like it separate. That's just me.
Well, the problem with the combos is if one piece fails, you got to replace the whole thing. It's usually more expensive than if you buy them separately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you just hit those either those two big box stores or anywhere else. They'll have Comcast compatible modems. There, I like the Linksys 1900 ACS router. It's a nice one. I think they're still out there. They're not very expensive. And then you would cut your TV service from Comcast, and you can lower your bandwidth down to 50 megabits and be more than happy with its performance.
Now, until I do that, I want to get this open DNS.
Yes, sir.
Can that go on to the Comcast box?
It'll be hard to do. It'll be easier to put it on your own router. In the meantime, though, you can configure your individual workstation, your computer itself, to use the right DNS setting. So instead of setting your IP information there to obtain DNS information from Comcast, you would put in the open DNS IPs.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then one other question. Mm-hmm. I have trying to stream some music.
Mm-hmm.
I have an old amplifier or receiver.
Yeah.
Is there any way to be able to hook up Wi-Fi?
To that thing?
Yeah.
Probably. I'm just not that versed on how to interface so you can get the music to the old amp that's popping into my head in any way. Just the amps these days are already capable of...
Right, yeah. I got a new one, but I have another speaker system upstairs, and my wife likes to stream...
Pocus?
But we have a little radio, but it's... Sometimes the signal's not good, so I'm trying to get it so I can use the Wi-Fi.
Right. I don't know how you – there's probably a device that you went onto the Crutchfield catalogs that are out there that will allow you to interface a Wi-Fi signal into your amp as an input, right? I mean, you're going to – that's all you'll really need is a box to do that. Right. I just don't know what box that is, and I wouldn't have enough time to look it up for you, unfortunately.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Joe. Good luck.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Remember, 50 megabits, guys, is all you need for bandwidth. I know they're selling you gigabit this and 100 megabit that and 500 megabit this. You can do it fine with 50.
But if they oversell, they get to charge more.
Exactly. I went to a business just recently, and they were getting quoted improving their internet speed. This is a business. This is a manufacturing company, does aerospace parts. And the Comcast guy, I'm not sure who it was, could have been any internet guy, was taking them from their 50 megabit speed. And what do you think they were going to recommend, Bob?
Gigabit.
75. Because he was interested in selling them phones. So instead of changing their bandwidth, he focused on the phone system, giving them 25-fold more megabits. Now, a business does need bandwidth, right? Because it's got more people connecting. But only 25 megabits more, that's your improvement? can't make this stuff up. Going to go to Guy in Middletown. Hey, Guy, what's up?
Hey, Eric and Bob. Morning to you this great Saturday morning.
Yeah, thanks.
So I've got an office with a local area network.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at options for having someone working from home or outside to dial into that network and access the local file server and printer and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are my options, like open source software or paid software running either under Windows or under Unix?
Well, you have two pieces of this. You got to get them to your network from wherever they are. And so your router firewall has to support a VPN tunnel.
Mm-hmm. And yes, I've already configured that. So I can point the router through the IP addressing through the VPN access to somewhere, to another IP address.
Right.
I just what I'm asking for is what software can I run either under Windows or Unix on that destination IP port that would support it?
Right. So it depends. Now you've already got the person connecting remotely, which is great. Now you got to figure out how they're going to operate and what they're going to use to remote control. What's their landing pad? And
exactly.
You would either configure a PC for that person as a host computer that they would remote control, because it's just one user, I'm guessing, that's doing this. If it's just the one user, you can set up them with a spare PC, something you're not using, and they'll remote control whatever applications you put on it through the VPN, and they'll be happy as, you know, just with a remote desktop configuration right through
yeah.
Windows. They'll be happy as anything.
Yeah, we can do that with GoToMyPC or Slashtop. That's pretty simple, but it's actually going to be multiple people.
Okay.
And I want them to be able to access a file share, you know, kind of like as their Q drive, for example.
So then you need to spin up what's called a terminal server. So a terminal server can handle multiple users at the same time on the same piece of hardware. So that'll depend on your server currently. If it can house another virtual instance of a server, you'd spin up that server and then configure the software within the terminal so that the folks that need to connect to it have access to those applications that are configured in the terminal server. Or you set up multiple PCs for those people, but that gets silly depending on the volume of computers you need to have remotely. So there's a point where it makes sense.
So they're calling that a remote desktop server today.
Okay, remote desktop, yeah. I still like using terminal server.
That's the original.
So is Windows 10 remote desktop a form of a terminal server?
For it, just for one machine, for itself, it's not.
Yeah,
Windows 10 is a individual PC platform.
You can only have one person logged in
remotely to
the desktop at a time.
Right.
So you can have multiple people logged in at the same time, but only one person is going to see the console.
Right.
Right.
So that's why
I think what Eric's saying is right, that I need a terminal server that can host multiple sessions.
Correct. So do you have a server there now, Guy? Do you have like a 2016 server there now in your business?
Well, the only server we have is a Unix-based file server from a company called QNAP.
Okay.
It actually supports like a WinSCP connection, so we kind of do that now.
Okay.
We connect via WinSCP, and it works pretty well.
Yeah.
I'd like to also give them the option of running a VPN so that their IP address that's broadcasted to the world is coming out of our office and not out of whatever Comcast decides to give them.
Yeah, and that makes sense. So, I mean, that Unix software, we're not big Unix houses, so I'm not exactly sure the flexibility of that software. But if it's a fairly thin application, it might work just with the VPN.
If you're only sharing files,
right?
What you could do is you could connect via VPN to your endpoint and then map to the Unix server as though it were a NAS and create a map drive, which you would be able to access when the VPN is connected.
But it is going to be slower technically.
Yes.
When you open that file, it's going to drag it across the VPN rather than just simply displaying it.
Right. So what are my options for running this terminal server or VPN, slave on either under Windows or under Unix? The ones I looked at are, I know you mentioned Proton, so I know I can purchase VPN software and run it under Windows, and then port the VPN password to it, and kind of get away with that. Is that Should I expect to pay for software that's providing that service?
No, you should be able to do it right there on your firewall if your firewall is capable. It should support X number of VPNs by default as part of the firewall itself.
Unless you only have a consumer grade firewall,
right?
So I got an LRT 214. It's pretty sophisticated, so I know I can support the tunnels going through. But I'm just trying to figure out what I need to run, either on a Slay PC running Windows or on a Unix box that's gonna host this terminal.
Windows will have to host the terminal server. You need a real server with a Xeon processor and a Windows operating system.
Right.
Windows server operating
system. Server operating system. Sorry. Thank you,
yeah.
Bob.
Okay.
So it's a right. bigger step to do that, right. but very
all
doable.
Right. So, yeah. All right. So if I were to load a Windows server on the network, then that could act as the endpoint for all these VPN connections.
Well, the firewall would be the endpoint. And then they would get to the term serve through the firewall and then run the applications.
What about these VPNs that run under native Windows? Are they any good?
Yep, they work fine, and again that'll connect as well to that firewall if it has the capability.
Right.
So you shouldn't need to pay anything.
That's probably limited to one or two users, or one at best, since it's a desktop PC kind of pretending to be a server.
Correct. You're only going to get one connection to a desktop PC. That's why you need a terminal server to handle multiple connections. And your firewall has to be capable of handling multiple connections as well.
Right.
It needs enough bandwidth. And so, again, a business grade, the one you just rattled off, I don't really know about. But, any business grade firewall can handle a bunch of VPNs. How many are you talking about connecting?
Maybe 5 or 6.
Okay. So, yeah, terminal server would be great for that. Versus buying 6 host PCs.
Well, I mean, what did we do a few years back when you wanted to from your PC just display a file server that's located somewhere on the internet? There's other software that'll do that, isn't it?
This is the way we did it years ago. It's called Citrix, or you called use Terminal Server, and I've been doing it for 20 years or longer. So before that, I don't know what they did. Before that, it's called a mainframe, and you paid for CPU cycles.
you want to talk about dial-up speeds. That's where things got kind of boggled down.
Exactly.
All right. Well, good luck with cutting the cord, and it sounds like we're making some progress there.
I think a lot of folks are making progress, and the more people that do it, the lower our broadband connections will be.
And once 5G hits, you won't even need a cable anymore.
Can't wait. Except that we're going to have so many people involved in blocking 5G because of the wavelengths that I think it would be a while before it actually hits because everyone's afraid of it.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, there's already towns in California that are blocking it because they're afraid of it.
Well, then the legislature's got to figure out how to test.
Exactly. Don't say it too loudly, guy.
Oh, sorry. Maybe go back and delete that comment. All right, fellas.
All right, guy. Good luck.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye bye. We're going to step out for a quick break. 4 lines open. Feel free to get online before the top of the hour. Then coming up at 11 o'clock, Dr. Alessi will be in giving you a second opinion on your health advice. I'll be right back. Back. Gotta love Mike when he's at the helm. He plays all the Rush tunes out there, which is great. Thank you, Mike. We're gonna be here till 11 o'clock. Dr. Alessi's in the green room getting ready for Healthy Rounds, so stick around for that. And we're here till 11. 1-800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC, talking about cutting the cable, bandwidth, security, facial recognition, VPNs, you name it. Remote desktop services, as it were, Bob.
There we go.
Terminal services.
Got to stay up with the times. Come on.
I know.
Nobody does terminal service anymore.
the name.
That's 2003 technology. Geez. Come on.
Same software, though, by the way.
Absolutely.
So we're here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. Everything we've talked about has been posted over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com, so stick around for that. So, Bob, you had an article you wanted to bring up about Einstein.
100 years ago, mm-hmm. an eclipse changed history and made Einstein a star.
Okay,
I'm going to jump to the back of the article because this is, I think, the most interesting part.
Yeah.
before, you see, back in 1919, they filmed an eclipse for the first time.
Right.
And they were able to observe, because there was a controversy between Albert Einstein and Sir Isaac Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, according to this, all right, Newton thought that that since light had no density.
No mass.
Okay, right. No mass, that it wasn't affected by gravity.
Right.
Whereas Einstein theorized that, you know, gravity could bend light.
Right.
Which, when they filmed this, they were actually able to see that it actually did. Mm-hmm. Because they could map the location of the stars when there wasn't an eclipse at night.
Mm-hmm.
And then, with that same area with the eclipse, seeing through the eclipse, the stars would appear to be in a different location.
Interesting.
So that they were able to actually prove out Einstein's theory that light could be bent. So, the interesting part of the article, which, you know, I think makes it really worth reading, is before the eclipse of 1919, Einstein's ideas were considered too radical and difficult to understand, let alone verify, to be widely accepted.
Really?
When the results were published.
So, wait a minute. 95% of the consensus was on Newton's side by the scientists.
Correct.
And
like the flat earther, so to speak.
Where have we heard that other thing before?
As an analogy.
So nearly 100% agree with Newton until this.
So, when the,
No, that's true.
But listen, when the results were published, some controversy persisted, as cosmetologist Peter Coles has written.
Yeah.
But each passing decade relatively seems more clearly to be settled science, and the importance of that long-ago eclipse has become clear.
Very neat. We'll put that link up there for you as well. Thank you again, guys, for joining us on this Saturday morning. We do appreciate it. Stick around. Dr. Lysis Evness, as I said, everything we've talked about posted live over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. Thank you, Mike G., for doing that for us. Thank you, Mike, for producing. And I guess we'll have to see you next week. Right, Bob?
See you next week.